Good evening. I'm your host, Aaron Ripmaster. Welcome to the Man Cave, where you're joining me tonight to record Diz Dad's podcast number 402 for Sunday, May 29th, 2016, are Don Donfris.
Hello, everybody.
James Cameron.
Hey, everyone.
And John Nidzwicki.
Hi, great to be here.
So I hope you're all enjoying your Memorial Day weekend. Unofficial beginning of summer, it's all underway. Tonight, we're going to be talking about backup plans. But before we get into that discussion, I want to take a minute and remind you that the Diz Dads podcast is sponsored by Fantastic Memories Travel and its Mouse Master Travel Group. The Mouse Master Travel Group focuses on Disney destination vacations, and Mouse Master agents would love to take care of the stressful parts of vacation planning so that you can focus on fun. You can check them out at mousemastertravel.com. So guys, you know, we talk about this kind of as a matter of course. It's the kind of thing that's the prime fodder for discussion among the various Diz Dad social media areas, and it kind of surprises me that it's taken us 400 shows to really deal with this topic. So I guess I'll start by asking you, you know, even from the very beginning, when you're first thinking about a Walt Disney World vacation, and you're first doing your planning, why is it that you would need to have backup plans in mind while you're planning a vacation? I mean, isn't the whole point here that you're just going to kind of set up your ideal plan? I don't know, Don, what are, you know, why do you need a backup plan?
Backup plan. Well, one thing, reservations tend to fill up, so you have to be able to adjust to how you need or want to have your meals if you are planning all your meals up. And there's life happens.
Right. Sure. Sure. How about you, James? Any thoughts about, you know, reasons why you need to have a backup plan even during those, you know, planning stages of your vacation? I mean, you might not even have an actual reservation on the books yet, and I think you still need to be thinking about second and third options just in case.
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole process of getting your vacation planned and all ready to go is very stressful, and not being able to get, you know, even one or two things that you have on your list when you decide to take your trip, because you may decide to take your trip, like, you know, with less than that 180 days to go, you know, for some reason, like maybe, you know, like Don said, life happens, and all of a sudden, hey, we could take a vacation, and let's see about going to Disney World. Let's see, like, we know we're inside the windows for dining reservations, and we're getting close to maybe fast pass reservations, so let's see what we can get. And I mean, everybody's got that ideal vacation in mind when you decide to go, but then when you actually sit down to make the reservations and get everything booked and look at everything, you know, it might not fall into place the way you think it would. So it's good to have a backup plan so you don't just lose it right then and there.
Right. Yeah, I mean, John, can you think of some reasons why you might have to go to a backup plan even back during the planning stages?
Oh yeah, one big thing, you know, from what I've gone down a lot are the different special events you have. So you're going to have backup plans for when you're looking at what there is, because, you know, you have the special events like the Halloween party and the Christmas party, but then even throughout the years you have things that people don't really consider because they don't always know about, like the Run Disney races, and those can kind of wreak havoc on where you can go, you know, things being constrained, and just traveling around, so that can make really upset those plans. So it's best to look ahead so you don't have to figure that out later on.
Yeah, sure. And even beyond things that are sort of recurring scheduled events, I mean, especially over the next year or so, we've got all kinds of things coming up that cause changes. For example, Animal Kingdom all of a sudden has hours until 11 o'clock at night all through the summer. Now, we expect those to continue beyond the summer, but they're not officially on the calendar yet. So you kind of have to keep both possibilities in mind, right? Maybe the hours cut back a bit when the crowds get smaller, but they've just put all this money into nighttime activities at Animal Kingdom, so maybe they will keep it open till 11 o'clock every night on into the fall. Who knows? We've got new attractions debuting. We've got, you know, the Frozen stuff opening in Norway here in the summer, along with Soarin' opening in Epcot. We eventually Rivers of Light, we presume, will still debut at some point. And you've got the nighttime safari already coming online. So all of these things that tend to have kind of a floating schedule a bit, right? Because we know about when they're going to happen, but nobody knows for sure, are going to impact that planning stage. And you need to be prepared to make changes. I mean, I have clients who, you know, I was frantically sending them emails because we got that announcement that they would start making Soarin' Fast Passes available. And, you know, people were booked for that week that Soarin' is opening, and their FastPass Plus windows were already open. They already had FastPasses made. But I needed to let them know that if they wanted to do Soarin', you know, they might be able to do it. And it's one client actually, you know, shuffled their park schedule because they were going to be done with Epcot on their trip before Soarin' opened. So, you know, all of these kinds of things happen, and you want to be ready to respond to them if they're things that are important to you. And I hate to break it to people, but even once you get to the most magical place on Earth, you still need to be ready with backup plans. You know, James, you've got some great examples for us of stuff happens that force you to go to plan B.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can't even count the number of times that, you know, we've had to shift gears, whether it be, you know, like from my daughter getting sick and having to, you know, pay a visit to CentraCare and, you know, time taken away from the vacation and then having them reshuffle our plans. My own visit to Celebration Hospital and the emergency room that kind of sidetracked our trip for a day or so there. You know, weather problems, travel problems, not being able to get out of the airport like we were scheduled to on one trip, and, you know, actually sleeping in the airport for a while, right, and then having to drive down and lost a couple days. So it's been we've had a lot of experience with that. So, yeah, a lot can happen.
Yeah, I mean, John, I'm sure, you know, you've got a little one. I'm sure that you've had experiences even with the little one in the parks where stuff happens and you just kind of have to shift gears.
Yeah, that's the big thing with me is, you know, my daughter's 4.5. My son's going to be 2 this summer. So for us, we're really in that game of not knowing how they're going to be that day. You know, whether it's going to be they're going to easily nap in the stroller or we're going to have to go back to the room. Are they going to be, you know, in a great mood and want to hit everything, or are they not going to want to do anything despite, you know, any fast pass or plans you have made? You know, we try to work room into our schedule to be flexible. But on top of that, you know, they're kids. They can be moody at times. So, you know, what their ideal is today, you know, when you plan, isn't going to necessarily be the ideal that day when we're actually in the park. So, you know, we have to be really flexible with what their needs are and just understand, hey, they're kids, you know, we have to make sure we take care of them first and the plans are, you know, adjustable.
Right, right. And Don, you know, I got to know that there have been times where you have had the perfect plan and watched it crumble in your hands, you know, as you stood there in the park.
A few trips ago, I ended up getting food poisoning.
Oh, ouch.
In the morning. So we go out to breakfast at Chef Mickey's. I end up getting sick 2 or 3 times there.
Oh.
Once while we were in the restaurant, I almost made it to the bathroom. Leaving the restaurant, didn't make it to the car, made it to the sidewalk. So that was, and then pulling over on the side of the road once on the way to the room.
Oh my.
So I spent a whole day in the room. And generally, I'm the one that is the leader of the band. And so Renee and Naya had a wing it without me. And Renee's not too good with directions, but luckily she kind of gave her a plan, and they ended up having a decent day, you know. And they actually somehow it came up at one of the, I don't know, they were on some ride doing something, and they said, yeah, you know, Dad's back in the room, you know, and he's sick. And they gave them, like, you know, the how they do, like, family of the day kind of thing,
right,
on a particular ride. So, you know, Naya was pretty young at that time, and, you know, they gave her a certificate, and then they gave me a little stuffed Mickey doll.
Oh, cool.
a little, yeah, to give to me to have a better day. So that was kind of a cool thing, other than me being in the room all day. But I set a world record that day for amount of visits to the to the bathroom.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it doesn't even have to be something, you know, so dramatic as, being sick. It's little things sometimes. I mean, we had this great grand plan that involved spending a day in Epcot, and then, morning in another park, afternoon in Epcot. Then we had dinner at Yachtsman Steakhouse, and we were all psyched. It was going to be dinner at Yachtsman, then we were going to come back into the park for Illuminations. We had done, you know, early dinner. And we get to Epcot for the afternoon, and it just starts pouring rain. Raining. You got to punt, you know? I mean, Epcot in the rain can be a real challenge. Most of the attractions are indoors, but getting from attraction to attraction at Epcot in the rain can be a challenge because there's
big spaces. Nothing's close.
So we know that we've got to work our way through World Showcase, right? We can't just dash around in Future World because the whole plan is to end up, you know, getting over there to Beach Club Yacht Club out through International Gateway. And, you know, it was this great plan. And once it started raining, the whole plan just kind of went to hell.
Yeah.
You know, we got ourselves, we went early, you know, went ahead and got to the yacht club. So we're kind of waiting around the yacht club because we didn't have a good plan B ready. And, you know, it was one of those planning fails on our part because we didn't adjust well. Ended up having a nice dinner, but then, you know, pouring so hard still that Illuminations was canceled that night. That whole day, you know, we would have been in a much better place had we been prepared with a plan B. And that was one of our first trips. I didn't know enough yet to be comfortable kind of adjusting on the fly. And so that's really, I think, where we want to go with this show here, is to help people kind of get a handle on some of the ways you can manage these situations when they come up. And I want to start with some of the ones we talked about that are among the most common. And those are those ones that occur during the planning phase. And the reality is that you got a lot of people who want the same scarce resource, and it comes up most often in dining. We've seen a lot of it in the fall where popular restaurants book up really fast. So I guess what I want to talk about here is what are some good backup plans for some of those most popular dining reservations that you may run into difficulty trying to get booked? And so I want to start with a Dizdad favorite. Let's talk about Ohana. That's one where it does book up fast. You know, you can often get that 8:30 or whatever, you know, that last dinner reservation. But if you've got younger kids, that's really difficult. So you want to do Ohana. That's what you were looking for. It's not available. What are some good alternatives to Ohana that they're maybe not the same thing, but you can get sort of the same feel out of it? Anybody have a suggestion?
Beer garden.
Okay. Interesting.
Kind of a, you know, buffet type thing. So, you know, similar in that regard. And then the other one I had would be Whispering Canyon.
Oh yeah. See, now Whispering Canyon to me is a better parallel, just because it would be a similar location as well. So it wouldn't necessarily have a domino effect on the rest of your plans so much.
Sure, sure.
How about you, James? You or John? Do you have a suggestion for somebody who, you know, Ohana didn't work? What alternatives should they look at?
My first thought would be Kona Cafe. You know, it's right there, also at the Poly, so it wouldn't alter your plans too much. Then I would kind of branch out from there. So, you know, like, what was it, the experience that I was looking for at Ohana? You know, maybe I'll want to go, maybe try Boma for like a good selection with buffet, all you can eat, something along those lines. Or was it the location and being close to Magic Kingdom? Did I tie it into those plans at all for a park? So maybe I want to stay closer there, try one of the other Magic Kingdom resorts.
Okay, yeah, that's a really good point about keeping the right mindset and thinking about not just the restaurant, but why you had chosen that restaurant in the first place. John, how about you? What would you tell somebody who said, we really wanted to do Ohana, couldn't get it. What should we look at instead?
Honestly, I should have just spoken up quicker because my first thought was immediately Kona Cafe. And for me, it's more of for the cuisine, which is Kona Cafe is actually one of my favorite ones. It kind of gets overlooked for having some really great food, you know, and kind of being in the, you know, you'd be in the same location, so you're still close to the park. It's not the same buffet style. So that was actually my first thought that I had. So I kind of drawn a blank beyond that one.
Okay, well, see, for me, I can't recommend Kona Cafe anymore. I know some people love it. I've had two bad experiences in a row, and so my position is I'll try it again in another year or two, but two in a row, you've crossed the line. I still love them for breakfast, but I can't do dinner there anymore. the only one that hasn't been mentioned that I would suggest, and it works only really for the proximity piece. It's certainly not the same atmosphere, but it's often overlooked, and I think sometimes that there are reservations available there when there aren't reservations available other places, and that would be the Wave at the Contemporary. I think it gets overlooked a lot, and it's got a solid menu. You know, it's not too. I think sometimes those restaurants in the other monorail resorts. Can be a little hard to find things that kids like sometimes, you know, they're maybe a little too fancy or that kind of thing. And the Wave's focus is on locally sourced food and organic food. But bottom line is it's still, you know, pretty hearty, you know, like home style cooking type food for the most part. So it's relatively easy to find things that everybody will enjoy.
Yeah, I wasn't even thinking of that one.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a completely different atmosphere than Ohana.
Yeah.
But if it's about fitting it into the rest of your plan, I think it works. All right, well, let's move to one of the most difficult ones and one that I get a lot of, you know, people, and this one's hard because often it's people who are taking a relatively short trip, right? They want a weekend trip, so they've only got a few days to work with, and they've got a young daughter and really want to do Cinderella's Royal Table. Right. And that one can be so hard with a short trip because you've got all these people with longer trips. And by the time their 180 plus 10 comes up, you know, their days are booked up because people who have a week long trip are, you know, lapping them. So, John, I'll let you go first this time. What would you recommend to somebody who really wanted to do Cinderella's Royal Table and there's just no availability?
So my first thought is not necessarily going to be more availability because I think it still probably books up, you know, fairly quickly would be Ocker House. If you can get in there, it's breakfast instead, but you still see a lot of the princesses. And when we took my daughter there for her birthday, it was actually a really great experience. I was very positive, you know, had never done it before, but, you know, great food there, you know, quick service. Princesses came around quick. So that was good. One I haven't personally done, but another option there. I know they have the tea parties at the Grand Floridian, kind of the princess tea parties there. I can't speak personally to them, but I know they have them. There's another option where you can see them, have a nice little event with them as well.
Sure. Well, James, you've got a daughter who's kind of just through the prime princess ages. So, you know, what would you do for Bella when you couldn't get Cinderella's Royal Table and she wanted her princess fix?
Yeah, our backup plan would either be Akershus or 1900 Park Fair for dinner, which right. Has Cinderella, sometimes Prince Charming. I've seen Ariel there. And you also get Lady Tremaine and the Wicked Stepsisters there. And you actually, not for my daughter, but for myself, I prefer 1900 Park Fair over Cinderella's Royal Table, just because you get such great character interaction there with the stepsisters and Lady Tremaine. They're always so great and so in character, and so I really appreciate the character interaction that you get. You don't get to see every single princess, but you do get to see a couple, and you get, you know, the dinner experience. And then I would think, you know, I would just fall back on making sure that we got all the, you know, the meet and greets in for the characters, you know, for the princesses we didn't see at the dinner.
Oh, there's a good point. You know, think about ways that you could adjust elsewhere too. If the primary reason to do that meal was to meet those princesses, you know, maybe you need to spend a fast pass on, a Princess Fairytale Hall meet and greet at some point. Anything you would add to that, Don?
Those were mine. Although it's quite expensive, is my special, my Disney Girls Perfectly Princess Tea Party.
Yes.
Looked it up because my daughter did it.
Okay.
It wasn't quite as expensive as it is now. It's right. $334.64 for an adult and a child.
Yes.
But it is, I didn't do it, obviously. My wife and my daughter did it, and they had an amazing time. They loved it so much, and they get a doll with it, a princess doll. It's very personal. A lot more interaction with the princess, although it's just one princess. But they loved it a great deal, but it also was, I think it was about $100 less when we did it.
Yeah, the price has gone up. Now, they do, the kid gets a doll. Not, you don't want to justify it and say, well, it's worth another $100 because she got a doll. I mean, it's a, $15 doll. But from what I understand, it's a pretty nice doll. And I think it's an interesting option because, if it's a matter of you really want your daughter to meet the princesses and get a princess atmosphere, and the other options aren't available, I think that there are fewer people who know about the that tea party at the Grand Floridian, and so it tends to be available longer. I think the price point scares a lot of people away, and it is pricey. Look, if your wife and your daughter can do that, and you're certainly happy with the rest of your family going off and doing something entirely different and, having a perfectly enjoyable counter service experience, you might not actually be spending any more than you would be spending to take the whole family to Royal Table.
No, and it's one of those things where that's like a one-time thing that you're going to do. I mean, you're not going to do it every time you go.
Right, obviously. Right. Probably not, yeah.
I guess there's some people that could probably do it that's not me. But, it's one of those experiences. I mean, my daughter still talks about it. They had an amazing time. And if that's an option, it's certainly worth doing it at least once.
Sure. Okay, so just to make sure that people, have accurate information about their options here, because I think that's what this show is really about, so it's really important. Cinderella's Royal Table and Akershus have the Princess Dining, breakfast, lunch, and dinner 7 days a week. 1900 Park Fair is princesses, Cinderella specifically, only at dinner. At breakfast, you get Alice in Wonderland and Mad Hatter, but for princesses, it's only at dinner. And the Princess High Tea at the Grand Floridian is high tea. So it's not in a normal meal time. It's at like, Don, help me out, 3 or 4 o'clock?
Actually, I think it was a little early. I think it was like 2 o'clock, 2:30, something like that.
Yeah, kind of a tweener time.
Yeah, kind of a tweener time. Which they went and did that, and I went and looked at pins, so.
There you go.
I'm all good.
All right. So we've talked princesses. We've talked Diz Dad favorite Ohana. The other one that I think commonly we run into issues with is Chef Mickey's, right? Because it's the signature, I think, sort of classic characters dining experience. So if you can't get that Chef Mickey's reservation, what do you suggest to people as a good, classic character dining experience? Where do you send them? And Don, you got stuck with the last one on the on the princesses. So where are you going to go for classic characters if, you don't want your food poisoning from Chef Mickey?
Well, I don't actually think I got it there, but.
Oh, okay. You already had it when you got there.
I had it when I got there. So anyway, totally classic, it would be probably the next one that compares closest to it would be the Tusker House. Has Donald, Daisy, Mickey, and Goofy. So that would be the one that closest matches Chef Mickey's other than Minnie Mouse. So I think that would be a good option for a lot of people.
Sure.
You know, there's a couple others that do various ones. I don't know if you want me to keep naming them or if you everybody gets a shot here.
Yeah, go ahead and suggest one more and then
I'll do one more. It would be not totally classic, but it's one of our favorites would be Polly at Ohana would be it's Lilo, Stitch, and Pluto.
Well, and Mickey.
That's totally classic. Oh, and Mickey too, right?
Yeah, so it is classic. I've used that one as a fallback for people a lot at breakfast.
Yeah, I mean, my daughter's two of her favorite characters. She loves Lilo and Stitch, so that's always been a great one for us. If Chef Mickey's is usually we try to do our first day there, but you know doesn't always work that way. So that's usually our backup is Ohana. So
all right, John, what would you suggest? You've had the suggestion as an alternative to Chef Mickey's Tusker House, which is in a theme park. So sometimes you know that can be a major consideration. You know, do they have a ticket for that day, or is this a getaway breakfast? That kind of thing. You know, it may not work for some people. The other alternative was at the Polynesian, the breakfast at Ohana, Best Friends Breakfast. What else would you suggest?
And actually, another option I have still staying outside of the parks would be Mickey's Backyard Barbecue at Fort Wilderness. Interesting.
Yeah.
So it's character dining show, but you get Mickey and Minnie and friends. You kind of get that barbecue food. So, you know, what dad doesn't like some good ribs? So it's kind of a nice little show, very fun for the kids. You kind of get outside. So as long as it's not, you know, it's a nice little alternative option and it still keeps you outside of the park. So you can kind of be out there. You can take the boat over as well, which kids always love riding the little boat to get over to Fort Wilderness itself.
Right.
So there you still get all those kind of classic characters and food, but you stay outside of the park. So you don't have to worry about, you know, filling up as much or what park you're going to be in at that time.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I like that suggestion because it's one that's maybe a little less well-known. People don't realize it's available. And it's a nice alternative option that has, like we said, all those classic characters. So how about you, James? What else are you going to look at if you can't get in at Chef Mickey's and you want classic characters?
Well, you always got the Cape May Cafe. You get less characters, if I remember correctly.
It's like one fewer. It's like three characters instead of usual.
You get three versus four. Yeah. So you got
but it's less expensive, too, usually.
Yeah. So there's always that. That's also outside the parks. Inside the park, actually, I just recommended this to someone the other day. They were looking for Chef Mickey, and I said, hey, something on my bucket list now is doing the mini seasonal dine. Oh, right.
Yeah, the Hollywood seasonal Studios. Dine for dinner at Hollywood Studios replaces the Disney Junior characters only for dinner at Hollywood and Vine.
But you know, depending on the season, you get you get classic characters that are dressed up. Like I was there, and we didn't have a reservation. We were eating at the 50s Primetime right next door, and I just happened to look through the window, and you know, you had Minnie, I saw Donald and Goofy, and they were all dressed up in like Hollywood starlet, you know, movie star. You know, outfits, and it looked really cool. So, you know, for the character experience and getting them to see them like all dressed up, and maybe, you know, if you're there during a holiday season, they might have some kind of holiday, you know, theming going with that. It could be a really good alternative to Chef Mickey's.
Yeah, that is a nice idea. The only other one that came to my mind is a you know, another sort of decent alternative suggestion is, you know, we've now got three meals a day at Garden Grill with characters in the Land Pavilion in Epcot. And, you know, that's one, it's true classic characters, right? You got Chip and Dale, you got Donald. You don't quite have the same mix, but you still get, you know, fun classic characters. They're in their farmer outfits, so it's a little different look than you're going to find them elsewhere in the parks. And again, that one does require park admission, but it's a decent alternative. So those, you know, those are some good dining backup plan, some good alternatives to have available, kind of, you know, something else. Let's move to some hotel issues and talk about a couple of different scenarios. So the first one is one that's come up recently because we just recently had the new discount programs come out and lots of people scrambling to try and find out whether they could get their existing reservations with a discount applied to them. And a lot of folks discovering that where they have their reservation currently booked, they couldn't get under the discount program they wanted, but maybe it was available in a different resort. So just want to talk about a couple of these about, you know, what resorts would be decent alternatives for people who find themselves in the position of needing to change resorts in order to capture a discount. So one of the resorts that I think has given people the biggest headaches has been Port Orleans Riverside. It's a very popular resort. It's a big, moderate resort. And for a number of these discount programs, people have had an awful time trying to find availability. So does anybody have, and we'll just, for the hotels, I think we'll let one person take each one of these three different examples. So who wants to tackle Port Orleans Resort? What are some good alternatives to somebody who's already booked at Port Orleans?
I'll take it, but I mean, usually, I mean, to me, French Quarter is my favorite, but usually there's not a lot of the discounts applied to French Quarter. And, you know, so after French Quarter, I would go Caribbean Beach. You know, to me, it's got kind of a bad rep, but we like it. We tend to drive, so we're not worried about a bus. You know, that's always a big complaint about there is, you know, you can be kind of far away from everything. And the rooms are slightly larger than the standard medium or moderate resort. The moderates, I mean, generally, Aaron, I mean, you're better at this at that, but isn't, I mean, the discounts don't do a lot of them.
Well, the discount, I mean, It balances out. If it's a free dining discount, you know, moderates get the same Disney dining plan free that the deluxes get. So in some ways, it can be the best way to leverage a free dining discount because you're paying rack rate for the room, and rack rate for a moderate resort is substantially less than rack rate for a deluxe.
Right.
But, you know, for the room rate discounts, the moderates can be a tough sell because it's a smaller discount than you're going to get at a deluxe resort. I think what I've found is that we're finding better discount availability at Coronado Springs than any of the other hotels for the most part. Now, you know, that's been a moving target over the last week. Different things would pop up at different resorts. I guess what I would say is overall, I've stayed at all the moderates now, and I would say that the experience is very similar from one to the other. I mean, yeah, I have my preferences.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think once you wrap your head around the fact that the decor is going to be a little different and the atmosphere is going to be a little different, the actual experience of the resort ends up being very similar.
Yeah. And we tend not to be real fussy about our rooms because we don't spend a lot of time at it, so.
And I will say that one thing that you might think about if you're booked in a moderate and looking to apply a discount is it's worth taking a peek at the availability and the pricing at Wilderness Lodge or Animal Kingdom Lodge, because they tend to be priced sort of in between what a moderate resort price would normally be and what most of the other deluxe resorts would be.
Yeah.
And sometimes that can be a really great way to, you know, really get the most value out of that discount, because it's often getting the same percentage discount as the otherwise more expensive deluxe resorts, which is a larger discount than is available at the moderates.
Correct. Yeah. That would be a good option.
Hopefully. Right. So John, I'm going to toss you the you know, the decision for the person who is staying in a monorail resort right? They're booked, let's say, at Grand Floridian. And that's one where there's just, it's been really tight getting discounts there. It's a fairly small resort as those Monterey resorts go. What do you suggest to somebody who's staying there and, you know, they see this big percentage discount and my goodness, on that bill from the Grand Floridian, that 35% is a big chunk of change. Where are you going to suggest they take a look as an alternative?
Okay, so, you know, when you're on the monorail, kind of all of them have their own little flair and they're all, you know, very similar. You know, if you can't get the Grand Floridian, you know, that chunk of change, you know, obviously you can move to one of the other monorails. My personal favorite is actually the Polynesian. I've kind of just always loved that one and the way it's laid out. And you kind of get your way across via the monorail or across by the boats. With that, you know, with that in mind, you know, if you don't mind stepping down again, you can take the boat and go over to the Wilderness Lodge. And yeah, it's a little bit longer of a trek. But as I said, if that would step down, and that saves you a very large chunk, as you said, you know, stepping down a little bit there, as opposed to staying on the loop itself, but kind of keeps you in that proximity. You know, then you have, if you go over to the Contemporary, you know, as opposed to staying in the tower, staying in the other rooms, still keeping you nice and close.
Oh, yeah, the garden wings, yeah, that's kind of the nice little secret, right? The garden wing at the Contemporary, which tends to be priced a little more friendly than the tower.
Yeah, you don't get quite that same view, but, you know, that proximity can be, I mean, really great, you know, because you can just walk over the Magic Kingdom when you want to from there, not even have to take the monorail.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I would say that the other thing that is worth keeping in mind when you're, you know, trying to look at these discount options and things in the deluxe resorts is sometimes if you'd already said in your mind that this is what your vacation was going to cost and you can't get a discount in the room category that you booked that would make your bill go down, I think sometimes it's still worth taking a look at what's available because, for example, that's why on our first trip we stayed concierge level at the Poly because we had budgeted for our hotel for this vacation. We had budgeted the Poly. We'd booked the Poly, and then this discount came out, and the discount wasn't available for the standard view room that we had booked, but we could book concierge level, and once you applied the discount, it was the same price. So it was like free concierge level.
Yeah, I mean that is one of the things. If you're looking to stay on the monorail, you're already looking at, you know, you've already thought that you're going to be paying a good chunk of change for that hotel room because you want that convenience and you want what it offers. So at that point, if you're already committed to that money, you know, where are you going to put that is really what it comes down to.
Sure, exactly. There are a number of, you know, room categories in either monorail resorts or even Crescent Lake resorts that I just can't imagine myself booking at full price. But hey, if there was a discount available that made that, you know, brought it into the same price range as the standard room, that's my opportunity, right? I'm not going to do it otherwise. but that's the opportunity. I mean, I think of it similarly with, you know, theme park view in the tower rooms at the Contemporary. Some of the theme park view rooms at the Grand Floridian that have the balconies, you know, that come right out towards Magic Kingdom. Just really great, unique perspectives that I can't justify paying for full price. But at a discount, if I've already figured I'm going to pay, you know, the regular rate for the room, it's gravy. So James, we're going to bounce back to you because you actually recently had the experience of, you know, you were taking this solo trip to run and you waited a little longer than would have been ideal to book your room and realized that you had no availability at the value resorts and you were looking for alternatives. And what are some alternatives when, not even just discount wise, but availability wise, you can't get what you want on property at Walt Disney World?
Oh, thankfully there are like a million hotels just off property that you could choose from. And It's not my first choice to stay off property. As a DVC member, we're always usually looking to use our points. This was a rare occasion when I was, you know, going by myself, and I wanted to keep it as low budget as possible. I figured the All-Star Resorts or, you know, or Pop Century would be where I ended up. And, you know, to my surprise, it was completely booked. So, so I just looked for, you know, what options there were. There were hotels I could have stayed at in the Disney Springs area. Some of them have some benefits to them when it comes to, you know, being kind of on Disney property or near Disney property or Disney, you know, Disney friend resorts, you know. And so some of them even have like character breakfasts, like we were talking about character breakfasts before. Like some of those hotels off just outside of Disney Springs have their own character breakfasts, and they're not that expensive. So that was an option there that I looked at. I also looked at some of the hotels along the 192 Strip in Kissimmee, Eastgate and Westgate, and ultimately ended up choosing the cheapest option I could find, which was a Motel 6. Just outside of the called Westgate, which was like two blocks away from, you know, a road that, you know, brings you into the Animal Kingdom Lodge area and the Disney's Animal Kingdom theme park. So I was really, you know, good proximity to those, and, you know, maybe 10-minute drive to get to Epcot or Hollywood Studios from there, and slightly longer for the Magic Kingdom. So it really wasn't that bad at all.
All right. And, you know, I mean, the names that you would recognize, I mean, one of the challenges of the hotels along 192 is that there are a lot of them, and it's really difficult for somebody who's visiting to kind of weigh, you know, which are the ones that are okay and which ones maybe aren't so much. The folks at Touring Plans, you know, the unofficial guide, does a pretty good job, actually, of surveying those off-property hotels as well, but they don't visit them quite as frequently as they do the on-property hotels, just because there's so many of them. But that's a good source to look to if you're trying to pick one. And obviously there are some big name chains that are nearby. I mean, you've got Swan and Dolphin that are on property and, you know, get some benefits of being an on property guest. Not many, but some. And so, you know, that's an option, and they're part of the Sheraton, you know, Starwood chain, which is soon to be part of Marriott as well because they're merging, but that's a whole nother story most people probably don't care about. You've got a couple of Hiltons that are on sort of either side of property to some extent, right? You've got one over in the Bonnet Creek area and one in the Disney Springs area.
I've stayed at that Disney Springs Hilton. It was nice. They make you pay for parking if you have a rental car, but other than that, it was a nice place.
Well, a lot of the off-property places will, but, you know, that's an interesting option. It's a good one. As you said, it's even got a character breakfast there. I don't think they offer it every day. It's like certain days of the week. You have to check their schedule, but, you know, those kinds of things are available. And there's some really nice luxury hotels that have opened right next to property fairly recently. So if you wanted a luxury hotel experience and, you know, you couldn't get what you wanted on the monorail, you've got a Waldorf Astoria that has opened as part of that complex with the Hilton over in Bonnet Creek, and then a gorgeous Four Seasons that opened, you know, just like hop, skip, and a jump from Magic Kingdom. And they've got a character meal there. They've got, you know, several restaurants. And I've heard really nice things about it. It's not on property. You don't get the, you know, all the same benefits of being on property, but it's a very nice hotel, and it would be a different kind of experience. But if a luxury hotel is what you wanted and it wasn't available on property, it's a decent backup plan. You certainly wouldn't find that level of amenities on 192.
Oh, no, definitely not. And I don't want my mention of the Motel 6 to seem like it was an endorsement. Because it's not. You know, I wouldn't advise anybody stay there. It was one of those, it was a risk.
Hey, calculated risk. You didn't get bitten. Nobody got arrested or shot. You know, I mean, you didn't get, if you listen to the trip report that just came out recently, you know, we record these in advance, but the trip report that just was released, you didn't come home with mold sickness.
Ooh.
So, you know, it, from that perspective, it was a decent backup plan.
It worked out.
Yeah. All right. Well, so one last sort of backup plan topic. I want to talk a little bit about FastPass Plus reservations, because these are an issue now, because you're booking these things out in advance. And although availability, it seems to me, for FastPass Plus has generally been quite good, really, for those early reservations. I mean, I don't think we've seen the stampede that we were afraid we might, like we see for dining, for most things. But there seem to be just a few attractions that, you know, are continual problems. And so the first one that I think people have problems with most often right now, and I'm going to put Anna and Elsa on the back burner for now. Because they're in flux. They're getting ready to move to Norway.
Who?
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with them.
Yeah. That's the advantage of having a slightly older daughter.
No.
So we'll put them on the back burner for now, because that one was crazy, but, you know, that the remedy is on its way. It may be a new problem, but it's hard to predict until we see how it goes. So I want to talk about the next most difficult one, which is the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. And it seems to me that most of the time when I go to try and book that for clients, I find that it's available, but it's often not available at the time that makes sense, right? Because they're going to start their day in Fantasyland, but the earliest I can find a Seven Dwarfs Mine Train is at, you know, 3 o'clock. So what are some suggestions for dealing with Seven Dwarfs Mine Train when the times available don't fit your travel plans? And this is probably a more specific question than you all were prepared for. I sprang this one on you a little bit, but, and anybody have any suggestions for that?
Well, I would say you just need to adjust your day. Maybe you get a later start that day and you stay in the park later.
Oh, you know? Good idea. So one idea would be just forget about morning, right? Just shift the whole day later. Interesting thought.
Maybe go to Disney Springs in the morning for a while if you don't want to spend a full day, or you spend it at your hotel, do a little swimming, have a relaxing breakfast, do a little more swimming or whatever, and then get to the park later. That's short of jogging around the park all day, which is certainly, it's out of any of the parks. I mean, that's probably one of the more doable ones because it's one of the smallest, you know, to jump around, but it kind of makes for a day.
Blunt, I mean, you know, you're going to find attractions that you can ride standby at Magic Kingdom that aren't going to be, you know, awful just because of the volume of attractions available. You're gonna find opportunities, but I think that's a really interesting suggestion, and one that I wouldn't have thought of immediately, is to just, you know, shift your whole day. Anybody have alternative suggestions for, you know, other ways to manage that situation where, you know, you have this whole plan laid out and lo and behold, you go to book that FastPass Plus 60 days out and it's just not available when you need it?
I mean, that's one of those ones where even if it is later in the day, like you said, it's an easier park to do a loop back if you want to. If you start there in Fantasyland, in the new Fantasyland area, you can loop your way around kind of either direction. And if you're talking about coming back after lunch, it's easy enough to loop your way back around there. Or again, if you get an early start, you know, and if it's later on, you can almost go back, cool down in the pool, and then come back in time, depending on what resort you're at. For that as well. Or, you know, the technique I really like is, you know, if you're there at Rope Drop, you go in, if you have yourself a little kid like I do, you just get, you know, your rider swap, and then you can come back and use that later in the day anytime you want to come back. So kind of can work to your advantage if you happen to have a really little one who can't go on.
All right. There's an interesting angle. And I like the other option, too, of taking a break in the middle of the day and just, you know, sort of rebooting your day at Mine Train and getting started again there. I think that works well. I think it's true that Magic Kingdom is probably the easiest park to be flexible about that. Let's talk a minute about a park where it's maybe a little more challenging, and that is right now Hollywood Studios. And you know, as it is, you've got that challenge of Toy Story, Midway Mania, Rock and Roller Coaster. They're both tier ones. You can only pick one of them. And what do you do if, and you know, I'll give you the example that I see most often. You've decided that, you know, you can handle doing, the rope drop attack at Rock and Roller Coaster and, you know, do your fast pass for Toy Story. But you go into the system and you find that there is no availability for Toy Story Midway Mania except in that first hour of the day. So what are you going to do? Right? Because that's the time you're supposed to be, well, go and stand by to Rock and Roller Coaster.
Punt. it's for us, I mean, other than one or two rides, I mean, my daughter's, I mean, you know, my wife always has to do Soarin'. My daughter always wants to do Tower of Terror. Other than a couple of those rides like that, we've been there enough times where it's like, if we don't get to it, it's not going to kill our trip.
All right.
But
so if it doesn't fit,
that's
move
it's
on.
Unique for us, but well, not just us, but I mean, it's not always an issue because a lot of times people don't get to do these trips or don't choose to do these trips as often.
Right.
So it is more of an issue. You know, for us, it's a little less of an issue if we don't get to do one of these things.
Right, right. What about you, James? How are you going to handle that when you know, you've built a plan that relies on, you know, a certain kind of availability and it's just not there?
That's a tough one. If I remember correctly, Rock and Roller Coaster has a single rider line, so
yeah,
that could be an option if your family's comfortable with splitting up, and you know, riding with strangers. It's a way to cut down the wait over there. So you could choose to do, you know, Toy Story first thing to avoid the long wait there, and then use a single rider line to cut down the wait at Rock and Roller Coaster. And I guess I've never done it myself. I was going to suggest this for Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, like another alternative, just to wait until the very end of the night if you're closing down the park and just, you know, and just ride it last thing. And that's probably the shortest line, you know, I've ever seen for the ride. I'm not sure Toy Story Mania, I think they close it early.
Yeah, it's trickier at Hollywood Studios, especially now that they're running the fireworks show, right? Because they do, and by the time that fireworks show starts, they've already closed the rest of the park for half an hour. And they do that on purpose to clear out that line, right? I mean, that's exactly what they're avoiding. And Toy Story closes during fireworks because the fireworks go off, you know, right behind the building.
Yes, that's a tricky one there. And I guess maybe, you know, if you could walk by and yell fire and see how people run off the line. No.
We are not recommending this.
No, not recommending that at all. If you got your heart set, of the two, I would do whatever it took for my family to get on Toy Story, just because it's a ride my whole family can go on versus Rock and Roller Coaster. But I always find that the standby wait, it's always longer. In my experience, it's always been longer for Toy Story than it has been for Rock and Roller Coaster. So I'd choose the lesser of two evils and choose a longer wait for, right. I'd choose a lesser wait of the two.
All right. How about you, John?
You know, James mentioned the single rider line. I mean, my personal experience, I've actually had bad experience with there, of it not moving as quick as any other single rider lines on a lot of other roller coasters for some reason. For that one, every time I've gone in it, you know, like kind of two-strike rule, you said, every time I've done it, it's been actually really slow in there.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So my solution was, my alternatives would be to try and maybe circle back, you know, late in the evening and see if you can get lucky with a shorter line there. Like I said, the Toy Story is one that's a very consistently poor one, so I would take the fast pass there and then either come back, try to circle back later in the evening and hope it gets a little shorter, or if you're there for a longer trip and you have a flex day, you know, where you might have, you know, your park or whatever, you really have a flexible day, if you really, really want to do it and you really don't want to wait, maybe you, you know, do the thing where you go there, you rope drop, you get Rock and Roller Coaster, and you come back out and go to wherever else you wanted to do that day. You know, maybe it's a go in there, rope drop there, and then hop your way over to Epcot.
Sure. And you got that
shorter journey there, and that way you can do it without the long wait for the roller coaster, but, you know, not lose as much time, you know, trying to go somewhere else.
Yeah, that's actually a great example of a way to leverage the new FastPass Plus system, right? Because you can have your FastPasses set in another park, you know, not even necessarily starting that late. I mean, you could start FastPasses in another park by 10:30 or 11 and have plenty of time to be at Rope Drop at Hollywood Studios, ride Rock and Roller Coaster, and get out of the park and still have FastPasses in place elsewhere. So, yeah, that would be a great alternative. All right, well, so I think we've gone through a lot of good examples, and I think many of these examples kind of bring up strategies that could apply to other situations that come up and that you need a backup plan for. To wrap up here, I just want to give each of you an opportunity to share, you know, either one, you know, situation where you've had a backup plan that went particularly well for you, or maybe went awry and we can all learn something from it, or a place where you want to make sure that people realize that this is a place where, you know, having a backup plan would be a really good idea. Anybody want to volunteer to go first? Because you didn't know I was going to ask you this, so.
I'll go. I to have a backup plan, I mean, is a great thing. You know, we've, on a couple occasions with FastPass Plus, as far as, like, even our last trip there, it was a lot on the fly because we talked about this on a trip report. My daughter was in a volleyball tournament, so we didn't always know. We couldn't make all of our reservations ahead of time because we didn't know when she was going to play or not going to play. So we had to leave a lot of stuff open. Mm-hmm. So, we had a lot of, you know, options, and it actually worked pretty good with the FastPass thing as far as getting reservations either the day before or day of for a lot of the things. And we were there in mid-June, so it was a busy time. So it's obviously, you know, we weren't able to do every single thing that we wanted because we couldn't make all those plans. But knowing that, okay, here's our options, I would get up first thing in the morning, I would go on, and more times than not, I was able to get everything that we wanted to do, maybe not always the exact time that we would have preferred, but, you know, knowing that there was having different things ready, we were able to fill our day pretty well.
All right. Yeah, that's a good example. And I think something that people, you know, they start to panic a little bit, right, when they look in the system and they don't see what they want available. And that, you know, what you're telling us, I think, is the most important useful takeaway is relax. Just keep checking back. Things do open up. It's very common for something that wasn't available at 180 days to, you know, pop up available 2 days in advance, day of even. Just keep checking back and working the system. All right. So, John, how about you? What's a kind of your parting backup plan tip?
With mine, I actually have, you know, an example from our last trip that actually worked out really well. And again, it goes back to what we already stated of relaxing and just being open to changes. We had the Halloween party the one night, and my daughter and I'm taking a nap like right before, right around dinner time. And so she ended up just being, you know, refreshed and stayed there. And we were there till like after midnight with a 4-year-old on her birthday in October.
Oh, wow.
And next day we had Animal Kingdom scheduled with, you know, very first run for the safari, and we knew that was never going to happen. I mean, we just knew that was not going to be an option the next morning. So we're like, okay, we got back to the hotel, and we're just like, okay, let's see what we can do. We looked at our fast passes. You know, we were able to, you know, drop our Safari one, because we weren't going to use it, and we found one a little later in the afternoon, where while it might not be, you know, as nice as you see everything early, we actually saw some baby rhinos and some other stuff that sometimes we hadn't actually seen on the safari, so it worked out really well. And instead, we, you know, made it in for the late morning and went straight to go see the Finding Nemo musical. So it worked out really well. We're like, we're flexible. We know we're not going to try and force ourselves to be there early just because we have a fast pass. We'll let it go and we'll move on and we'll find something else. And if we got it, we were great. If not, we figured, well, we'll just watch the time, wait time all day to get on the safari when we can. Yeah, so it's one of those where flexible and, you know, it just worked out. And the one other one I actually, just a really small one is, you know, reservations, 180 hours out, book them when you can. You know, when Be Our Guest first opened up and we were down there, was my wife, myself, and my daughter, and we just couldn't get a reservation. They were all booked out. We constantly checked back all the way up to our trip, couldn't get one. And the one day we were there, we're like, just walk up and ask them when they're opening for dinner, see if they have anything, and they were able to fit us in. Like, it was a random chance, doesn't necessarily happen, but it never hurts to at least try and ask if you don't have another reservation.
Sure.
You go up and you ask them, what's the worst thing they can tell you? No, well, that's the option you started at, so, you know, if you really want it, try it, and if it doesn't work out, you know, again, be flexible and just move on.
Yeah, and you weren't any worse off than before you asked, so why the heck not? All right, so how about you, James? What's your parting thought?
Well, I was going to, you know, mention that, you know, it doesn't hurt to ask. We had a few examples of that where one comes to mind where my daughter got sick. And in order to, we had dinner reservations, we were going to miss them because we had to take her, you know, to the CentraCare off property. So we happened to be, we were eating at 1900 Park Fair, we happened to be right there on the monorail. So we just shot over and we walked up and it was nowhere near our reservation time. And we just said, hey, you know, like, is it possible, you know, to maybe get in early? And they're like, and they checked, and then sure enough, they were able to see this. We were able to have dinner first and then go, and which, you know, made her happy because she was really looking forward to that experience, and it kind of perked her up. And then we were able to, you know, relax and handle the whole doctor situation after that, knowing that it didn't completely ruin our plans for that day. And, you know, there's been a couple of times, and it hasn't always, you know, it's tougher with, like, FastPass, you know, because they have, you know, those windows, and especially for the popular ones, people are always making up excuses. But it all comes down to what cast member is operating, you know, that entrance, and, right, you know, it's their discretion. So it never hurts to maybe ask if you've got a good reason why maybe you missed your, something happened and you didn't get over there in time. We should have a loop back through the park. And you missed the window by a few minutes, you could ask, and, you know, they might let you through. You never know. So it doesn't hurt to ask. And like I said, just relax. You're on vacation. A bad day at Disney World is better than a good day most other places. So no matter what gets thrown your way, just take it in stride and try to have the best time you can have.
Yeah, and I will only add to that one other simple little piece, because I mentioned this to somebody, you know, just the other day, and they were like, wow, really? So, you know, Disney World realizes that these schedules, you know, don't end up fitting together like perfect puzzle pieces in practice, right? We do our best to plan perfectly like that, but it just doesn't always quite work exactly right. And if you've got a tight window after a dining reservation, like between your dining reservation and your FastPass return time, hang on to that dining receipt. If that dining receipt shows that you were, you know, in the restaurant having your meal at the time when your FastPass expired, generally speaking, I'm sure there are exceptions out there. Somebody's going to come, you know, telling me, no, I tried, it didn't work. The majority of the time, you have that receipt because they're time-stamped. And you show that to the cast member, they'll wave you on through. You know, I wouldn't plan it that way on purpose, but if it just works out that way, they're going to be flexible with you because they realize. I mean, look, my family and I checked in for dinner at Rose and Crown. We'd planned on having an early dinner so we'd have time to go find a spot for Illuminations, because, you know, we didn't want to roll the dice on getting one of the waterfront tables, so we made the reservation early. Well, for whatever reason, they had a large party there that just didn't get up and leave. So we didn't get seated for our, you know, 5:15 reservation until like 6:30. But we ended up in a waterfront table. And it wasn't anybody, you know, so we ended up getting that front row view of Illuminations. That was great. That was what we wanted. Alternatively, had we taken that dining receipt, if we'd had a fast pass return time at Test Track that, you know, we were missing because of that dining reservation, if we'd have taken that receipt over there, Test Track would have said, yeah, we get it, you know, and waved us on in. So hang on to those receipts if it's going to be a close call. All right. Anybody else? Any last thoughts?
I have one other one.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Go ahead, John.
Just, you know, we talked a lot about here. The tips were, you know, when you're there, being flexible. I also think it's very important, even when you're planning, to be flexible. You know, even when you're 180 days out, you can't always get everything exactly as you want. So it's important to kind of figure out what are your priorities and what do you want most and what days, and kind of plan around that of, here's my priorities of, look, we have to have this dining, so you get it when you can get it. And if it doesn't fit your plan perfectly, you adjust the rest of your plan accordingly. Like, we always try to have kind of that backup even when we're planning of, look, this is what we want to do. Here's all the options, but what do we want most? And that's what we're going to make sure we get first, try to get where we want. And everything else kind of just will fill in around that, and we're adjusting as we can. You know, some things might be hard and fixed where, you know, we have to go to the party on this day, but, you know, your other stuff, you're in the parks, you're going to be flexible, you know, when you're there. But even when you're planning, figure out what you want to try and fit everybody's wants and needs most. But, you know, even in the planning stage, be ready to make adjustments when you need to.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that. I mean, I think some of our best park days ever were days that came together almost by accident because the original plan didn't work. And, you know, in desperation, I switched gears completely, came up with something completely different. And for whatever reason, it just ended up being perfect. You know, it ended up being a particularly great day. And I don't know that I could replicate it on purpose, but the lesson is that, as James was saying, bad day at Disney World is better than a good day most other places. And so as long as you're open about it, come up with a new plan. You never know. It might actually work out better. All right. Well, you know, you've heard our suggestions regarding backup plans. We'd love to hear some of your backup plan stories. You can email them to us at podcast@dizdads.com. Visit our blog, dizdads.com. Tweet us at Dizdads Podcast on Twitter, and participate in the discussions in our forums at boards.dizdads.com. And we're on Facebook at facebook.com/DizDadsPodcast. Until next time, I've been Aaron Ripmaster with Don Donfris.
Good night, everybody.
James Cameron.
Happy Memorial Day, everybody.
And this podcast's favorite backup plan, John Nidzwicki.
Thanks for having me, and have a good night.